Let the show begin. You guys have fun out there today.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. So without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George, Tom, and Kelly.
Good evening and welcome to New Shooter Canada. This is episode 84. I'm one of your hosts, Kelly Lynn. We also have another one of our hosts, Thomas Donnelly.
Hello.
And Mike Hissen.
Hello.
Hello. George isn't with us tonight, so he had a run to do this evening. So it's just the three of us.
George is driving his big boy truck.
Yeah, he's driving the big boy truck. So we're going to go and get into it right away. We're going to talk about what we did in guns this week. Mike, why don't you actually start us off?
I reloaded another 100 rounds of 9mm this week in preparation for a match. I'm still a little unsure on my crimping. I did take your advice, Kelly, and I emailed the guys at the Reloading Podcast.
Yeah, I saw that. Mike gave you a little bit of advice, did he?
Yeah. Yep, I also sent them a longer email with a little bit more detail. And then I... Go ahead.
What did he have to say about the crimping?
Pretty much he said that it looked like I wasn't doing any crimping at all on my rounds yet. Mm-hmm. Like, he thinks that... I guess they were just pretty much going up into the die and nothing was happening, so... So,
did you
I sent him a couple more... yeah, I did adjust the die eventually, and I turned it down, and I had a hard time because I was trying to figure out what to look for when your round is properly crimped. And I tried, like, I pulled out one of my factory rounds I had, and I looked at it, and I don't know if it was factory crimped or not, but it, like, there was nothing on it. You couldn't tell if there was a crimp on it or not. So I just don't know what a properly crimped 9mm round should look like. So, hopefully I'll find out soon what it's supposed to look like, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I notice you don't usually see a crimp on the factory die. I've got the same die as you, and what I've done is I noticed when I was pulling the crank up, the round was actually pushing the whole shell plate up a little bit. So even though it tells you to do one turn, I ended up doing a turn and a half to accommodate for the space of the plate going up. And you can actually see a small crimp around the outside now.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I've actually noticed that too, that my plate will move a little bit. But I notice it also really depends on if there are other rounds in the other positions on my progressive press. Like when I'm trying to adjust it and I just have one round going up and down, I'll set it and then I'll start, okay, go into full production, and then I'll check the overall length and it's different than what it was before. And I've noticed that depending on what station there is brass or rounds in, like in the seating station, if there's a round in there, then it changes the crimp completely. And I assume that that just, it plays with the amount of play that's in the die, or not in the die, in the shell plate.
Yeah, it's going to make a difference.
Yep. Yep, so I'm going to keep playing with that. Hopefully I'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I shot a match yesterday at Eganville District Shooting Club, an IDPA match, the first official match of the year.
How'd you do?
I did fantastic, and I think it's because
awesome.
There were no shots further than 10 yards away. I know that from 10 yards away, I can pretty much put my gun on target and just keep yanking that trigger, and I'll know that I won't do much worse than a down one on the target.
Good for you.
So I shot really fast, and I had lots of points down, but I think overall I came third in the match.
Excellent.
Oh, congratulations. Good for you.
How many people
scored? I think there were 23 people on the scorecard.
Oh, excellent.
Sweet. Good for you.
Yeah. Yep, okay. That's all I did.
That's all
you
did?
Kelly? Yep, that's all I did.
Well, so yesterday was Saturday. You know what I do on Saturday.
SFRC.
Yeah. So I went to... I didn't buy anything.
What?
Not even ammo? No. I still got lots of ammo, so no. I went and returned the bolt carrier group that I bought.
Why?
Well, because Kevin decided that he's going to buy new stock and that for his AR, and he's going to be... Yeah, so I returned what I had, put it towards what he's buying, and then next week when he goes to pick it up, he is going to switch it out his and give me his. So, in other words, I'm getting Kevin's
other one. So
you're
getting your girlfriend discount again.
No. I bought the carrier bolt for mine this time, and I returned it, and I applied it to his stock, so now he doesn't have to pay full price for the stock.
Oh, okay, I see.
Oh, he's okay. Getting the boyfriend discount.
Ah, well, that's about time.
I know, eh? Hey, what do you mean about time? I've been buying him things, you know.
Oh,
stuff.
I know, you're good to each other.
I know. Anyways, so I said, because, you know, he said, you can return it and I'll just give you mine. I said, I don't want it. I'm a big girl. I want to be a big girl, you know, and build my own AR. But anyway, but he said, no. He goes, return it and then you can get the one from, and I'm going, you know what would be really nice of me would be to return it and apply that to what he wants to buy. And then, yeah, he's going to give me his from his, anyways, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's what we did. And I went to the range today, first time in over 2 weeks. Went to the range and it was raining. But yeah, I went because I wanted to go. Kevin, he didn't really shoot. He just let me shoot and I shot my Glock 17. Just trying to look at the fundamentals again and see if I, you know, the stuff that I've been doing, the grip strengthening and that too, and some of the trigger. Dry firing that I've been doing, see if it's helped at all. And yeah, it has. I shot the Sierra 64 target again and I submitted it and it was a lot better than my last one. So
now, did you shoot prone with a sling or with support?
My Glock 17?
Oh no, you did the pistol target. Because there's two. There's a pistol and there's a rifle.
Yes, there's a pistol and there's a rifle, but no, I shot it at the 7 meter mark and not at the 100 meter mark with the sling.
I'm a Glock 17.
It was the Glock 17. When I submitted it, I said, hey, I'm not somebody who shoots pistol normally, so I was just trying to build my fundamentals and that as well. So that's all I did.
I've been checking the mail every day for my sticker, but it hasn't come yet.
Yeah, I haven't got my sticker yet either, so I resubmitted. So, what Thomas and I are talking about is there's, if you go onto Facebook, it's the Sierra 64 Facebook page, and if you submit their target, they will send you a Canadian maple leaf, a black one, and they'll send it to you in the mail, and you can actually put it on either your rifle or your handgun. All right, Thomas, what did you do this week?
I did similar to what Mike did. I reloaded 100 rounds of 9mm, and I actually, when he was talking about his crip, I actually checked mine. And since I switched to the aimpoint projectile, I had to change the overall length, which affected the crimp and everything else. So I spent about 20 minutes readjusting it. Now I have a nice crimp on it. So I went up to the range today. And what I decided to do is last week I made some plus P loads just to see how the Excalibur would do, because it comes with a heavy duty recoil spring and it liked it. It was peppy. I wouldn't recommend shooting a prolonged amount of those because it wouldn't be good for the gun. And Grandpa said, yeah, crony it, but don't shoot a lot of it. It's what he told me. So I said I'd do the opposite this week. I dropped the powder charge down to 3.6 grains of tight group. I put the overall length up to 1.150 and I put a nice crimp on it. It shot beautifully, but I had, out of the 100 rounds, I had two failures to lock the slide open in the last shot. So there's not quite enough power in that load to cycle the slide all the way back. So I can put it up a notch. Besides, I won't make power factor anyway at my club range. But I just want to see how the gun cycled with the light loads. And accuracy wise, it was good. It prefers the hotter loads, so I'm going to pop it up a little bit. And then I had a mess of brass. I've been sorting brass all day yesterday. So I've probably got about 1,000 rounds of Winchester, 500 rounds of Federal, 500 rounds of Remington. So I like sorting my brass. And if I'm going to be competing at all, I use the same brass for all my loads. So I went through all that. And what else? Oh, we heard from one of our listeners. He was talking. He sent us a Facebook message about this young shooter. And there's this young shooter we'd like to tell you about. Her name is Mary Patrick. She's an Army cadet from Cornwall who's had an amazing shooting career since she started shooting 5 years ago. And unlike most of us, Mary never had a shooting mentor growing up. Like we assume, usually we get, like you had Kevin, I had my stepdad, or Mike probably had Sarah. But she never shot at all until she had a friend talk to her into joining the Army cadets about 5 years ago. But we'll get into more detail about her career and her goals in a future episode. We're actually speaking to her to try to get her on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we would like to ask our listeners to help Mary by supporting her by voting in a poll held by her local newspaper. Now, I did put this on our website. I did share it all over the place. So this paper is taking nominations for top local athletes awards. And a shooter has never been nominated in this category before. And we'd like to give this an amazing 70-year-old young shooter some New Shooter Canada love and support. So we're asking all of our listeners to please visit the link. And it's basically www.theseeker.ca, seeker/choice/awards. There's a link on the show notes, and there's also a link on our webpage. And vote for Mary as the top local athlete. And we're looking forward to having Mary on as a guest in the future. Hopefully she can attend this year's charity shoot if it doesn't interfere with her exam schedule. I actually went on her, she's got another page too, because she's also doing fundraising for the Olympics. And, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money. So I went through some of her past shoots. She did the RA course last year, so she would have been 16. Not only did she get the top junior shooter, she got the top junior top shooter overall. Out of the 600 points, or 60 shots, she got 600 out of 600. So she got a perfect score, and she got 51 X's out of the 60. So this kid has the talent. So we'd like to, you know, go onto this website, give Mary some love, and vote for her to get her the Athlete of the Year award in her area, because she's going to be an up-and-coming shooter that we're going to keep our eye on.
Okay. So we're going to be doing guns in the news. So the story that I have is the Edmonton Shooting Center is moving to Acheson. So Edmonton's latest indoor shooting range will not be opening at its proposed location, it says, and will be delayed by at least 1 year. Recently, the Edmonton Shooting Center, which was pegged to be the largest indoor shooting range in Western Canada, announced that their proposed location on Edmonton's West End will not be the home of the new range. Instead, it's been elected to move to another location in Acheson. They took to Facebook to announce their new plans, citing the cost and limitations of renovating the existing structure at their initially proposed location as the reason for the decision. Anyways, they're going to be moving. They're going to be offering 24 pistol lanes, a retail space, classrooms, simulator training, cleaning benches, reloading stations, secure firearm storage, members lounge, and 100 meters indoor shooting range.
Oh,
so
excellent. 100 meters indoors.
Yeah, so it's going to be another year, but hopefully they're going to get up and running and get some people in there. And 100 meters, whew, that'd be good.
Biggest indoor range in over around here is only 50. I've never heard of a 100 meter indoor range around here.
Mm-mm. Yeah, me neither.
So those reloading stations, does that mean that like they'll have, I guess, like a press there so you can make your own ammo as you're like testing grouping, or
wouldn't that be cool?
I'm assuming
that I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just go in, bring in your powder, bring in your anyways.
Maybe it's
that's
rentals,
something we're gonna talk
knows?
About.
Yeah. All right.
They're gonna have everything. Mike, do you have another story for us?
I do. Quebecers favor gun favor registry from Canadian Press. A new survey conducted for a gun control advocacy group suggests that 2/3 of Quebecers are in favor of registration of long guns.
Letters,
Letters poll for Police Sylvia.
Sylvia?
Yeah.
Okay.
Comes out of provincial lawmaker study, Bill 64, which, if passed, would create Canada's only provincial long gun registry. The survey, a copy of which was provided to the Canadian press, found that 69% of those polled were in favor of a registry versus 26% who were opposed. 5% had no opinion. The online poll surveyed 1,004 Quebecers between April 15th and 17th. Respondents were asked, do you agree with the implementation of a firearms registry, the registration of long guns, in Quebec, so as to be able to link each weapon to its legal owner? But the debate surrounding Quebec bill has caused political wedges and ideological divides. Grassroots opposition to the bill has emerged, with much of it coming from hunters and sport shooters. They argue Canadian licensing regulations are sufficient, while gun control advocates counter most Quebecers want to register and that licenses aren't enough. A spokesman for grassroots group, I'm going to say in English, All Against a Quebec Firearms Registry, says that the poll results are not surprising given who commissioned the survey and the way the questions were asked. But if we ask the questions in a different way, looking at cost versus utility, for example, it could completely change these results. Guy Morton said, the survey at some level is leading, giving them the numbers they want, they were looking for.
Right. Well, so Thomas, leading. Sorry, go ahead.
it's a leading question. And there's been about three gun surveys I think we've all competed in or completed. And it's the other way around. 80, and that's only 1,000 people. We've had it where it usually is 80% are against the registry, and you're talking 5 to 10,000 people. So they put a prearranged, loaded question, and they aimed it at a certain group, and of course they got the response that they wanted. So,
well, Thomas and I chit-chatted about this a little bit beforehand, and I think, Mike, you were on the call as well. Statistics, you can get them to basically say whatever you want based on, one, how you're asking the questions, who you're asking the questions to.
Exactly.
They only polled 1,000 people. Now, was this 1,000 people in the core city demographic, or were these people who are, across the whole province? Did it include shooters as hunters as well, or did it? Basically,
we don't
so
know who they asked.
Yeah, exactly, and what the questions were, and how they asked it as well. So, surveys will say what you want them to say based on how and who, right?
True, and the gun control advocacy groups tend to like to sway things in their direction anyway, just from past history. So,
mm-hmm. Well, people like to sway things in their direction no matter who they are.
True, very true. but we all know that the majority of Quebecers don't want the registry. It's just a little centralized area in Montreal where all the power sits that want it done. Most of the people don't.
Well, I think that people who actually, there's a group that do want the registry, there's a group who don't want the registry, and there's also a group that are on the fence that really don't care or aren't informed. Do you know what I mean?
True.
Okay. So that's everything that's on guns in the news, and let's talk about what's new in the industry. So right now, New Shooter Canada has decided to temporarily change our What's New in the Industry segment, and over the next few months, we're actually going to be talking about what's new with our sponsors instead. It's basically our way of thanking our sponsors for helping us achieve a goal of making the most successful charity event ever. So this week's sponsors are... first one's going to be the Reloading Podcast. Do you want to tell us a little bit, Thomas, about what's going on with the Reloading Podcast?
I think Mike from the Reloading Podcast is giving us a set of RCBS scales, really nice triple beam scales, and some patches. And if you're new to reloading, or even if you're an established reloader, have a listen to the Reloading Podcast. It's a great show, a lot of useful information. I know a fair amount about reloading, but I don't know anything about casting or swaging. So I listen to it every week, and I'm constantly learning a lot. And Trevor's on it now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, he is. And Mike and Jim and, even Jason. Did you hear Jason came back on it?
Yeah, he was on last week.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a great show. It really is good.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to actually learn tips on reloading. You know, even Mike's checked them out. Right, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I've been listening to them for, I think, about a year now.
I've been listening, too, but I don't reload, so I should really get on that, eh?
And they're on what? The Firearms Radio Network. So there's all kinds of, if you go to listen to their show, you have to actually go through the Firearms Radio Network. And there's linked to about 10, 15 other shows. And there's some really good shows on there. So I download quite a few shows on the network.
Okay. So the other one that we wanted to actually feature this week is Price Check Ventures. Mike, do you know anything about them?
I know that I like their magazines. I have about six of them.
All right. So Matthew and Owen own Price Check Ventures, and they're going to be actually giving us a Beowulf, I believe it's Beowulf mix, that they're going to give to us for the charity shoot, maybe even some gift certificates in that as well. So check them out. We're going to actually add the links to their Price Track Venture to the show notes, so you guys can actually check them out on the internet and maybe order some stuff as well.
You know, they actually sell fireworks too.
Mm-hmm. They do, and Tannerite as well.
Which is, we still haven't shot the Tannerite that we bought off Owen last summer boat.
No, they haven't. Oh. But maybe. I think Matthew is saying that he's going to bring some Tannerite anyways, because people can use it in Ontario. They just have to use it on Crown land.
Yeah, it just has to be on private land. It's just not approved in any of the ranges. And hopefully, Jewel's coming too. So we get to see Mike.
Yes.
Matt. I don't think Owen's coming, but I know Matt, Jewel, and Trevor's coming to the charity shoot. So we'll get most of them out there. And I don't think Frosty's coming. It's too far for him to travel.
No, he is. Adriel is not coming. So we will see. We'll see Matthew and Jewel and Trevor as well. But Owen and Adriel are not coming, so. Well, I haven't heard from Owen, so maybe you will. All right, so we just wanted to say thank you to both of them because of the fact that because of them, we're going to have an awesome charity shoot, so
they're
thank
nice
you.
They're nice snacks, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, so main topic tonight. The main topic is we're going to be talking about range brass. Have you guys been picking up some range brass? Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that, what to do with it, and that as well. And Thomas and Michael, do you guys want to actually take it away?
Well, I used to pick up a lot of range brass at my old club when I had a 40, because OPG used to practice all the time, and they never kept anything. So I had buckets at 223 for the longest time, and 40 caliber. 40 cal, you got to watch it, because especially if it's been shot through a Glock, because it doesn't have a fully supported chamber, and you have a little bulge. So unless you get a die that's actually resized the whole die, I would pass on picking up any Glock brass unless you can process it correctly, because it's kind of weak at the end. Do you pick up a lot of range brass, Mike?
Tons. I pick up my brass, the guy beside me, and the guy before me.
Well, you know, it's something to do and that. I know that I pick range brass, and so does Kevin as well. So we pick up 40, we pick up, you know, 9mm, whatever.
It's expensive to buy it. It's so, last time I bought a package of brass, I think 100 pieces were like almost $40.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys don't reload. They just throw it in the garbage. So if it's there and it's, use it.
I know. Yeah. So,
and you never know what caliber your next gun's going to be in, so you might as well pick up everything.
You know what? It's a great idea, and the reason is because you can also sell the brass as well once you've actually prepped it too, right?
Jason gave me a whole box of, a huge frickin' box of 223, and I'm going through it. There's all kinds of 7mm brass in there. So if anybody has a 7mm and they need brass, let me know, because I got a box full of it.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you guys some questions, okay?
Okay.
You cool with that?
Yep.
Okay. So, how clean does your brass really need to be? Like, seriously.
Well, it needs to be clean enough to function properly in the firearm. The inside doesn't really matter that much, as long as it's not full of debris and crap. I don't usually make a habit of cleaning my primer pockets a lot, unless I'm competing, and I may clean them out, you know, once every 10 reloadings. Where I know a few PPC shooters that are fanatic, they clean it inside and out, and they have a brush and they clean their primer pocket. And we're talking about pistol brass, we're not talking about rifle brass, because neither Mike or I reload rifle. Rifle's a total different nature altogether, a totally different beast. Like, you have to clean your primer pockets, and you have to trim your cases and everything else. You don't need that type of work in order to do a pistol case.
Okay.
And I actually do reload some rifle.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I've reloaded 22-250, and this year is going to be my first year reloading 223.
223, yeah. Kevin reloads 223 as well. So.
Now, what type of media do you use to clean your brass?
I use, I believe it's the corn cob.
Okay.
It came. I had when I got into reloading, I went on to, I think, Amazon. You could buy Frankfurt Arsenal. They have a complete brass cleaning set, and it comes with the tumbler, the media, the polish, the separator. So I bought that all in one. I'm pretty sure it was corn cob that came with that.
Okay. So yeah. Corn cob media, sorry, or walnut shells, that's another thing that you can use as well. Sorry, Thomas, what were you going to say?
I was going to say walnut, and there's also, I believe Kevin uses a, Trevor uses a stainless steel media. There's also an ultrasonic, which actually, if you take your primer pockets out, it'll actually clean your primer pockets, the ultrasonic.
Yeah, in my garage, it was part of my, what do we call it? The girlfriend. Kevin took me to Venice last year, so he said we're setting up the garage as a reloading. So we run in there. We run the ultrasonic, and we also the tumbler as well. So we have it. We have the corn cob median. And we also actually put in it ball bearings as well, and then also the ultrasonic as well. So if he likes his really clean and shiny, so we do the ultrasonic twice, and then we put it into the corn cob media and run it through there, and it comes out and looks beautiful.
Now the ultrasonic, it cleans out your primer pocket too. That, like, does he deprime his brass before he puts it in?
Yep. We deprime the so we sit here and watching TV or whatever, and we deprime, and and then we put it through.
That's my next step. But that ultrasonic system, it's not cheap. It's expensive, and the cleaning solution isn't cheap either.
Yeah, it's not. It's not all that. It's not all that cheap, and that. But yeah,
if you can't afford that, if you just get the tumbler. I picked up like a 50-pound or 75-pound bag of the crushed walnut. One of the listeners was telling me about it at Princess Auto. Huge freaking bag of crushed walnut. And I think I paid like $15 for it. Where if you buy that one little tub, the media stuff that Lyman makes, that one little tub, it'll last you a couple months, but it's going to cost you $30. So I bet you I have enough crushed walnut downstairs now to last me a lifetime.
Oh, you know what? You can also another tip. You can actually go to the pet store and get the corn cob medium.
I have, but I found out that stuff it's too big. It's not as finely crushed as the other stuff, and it tends to clog up your primer pockets too. Another trick too is if you are using the say the Lyman corn cob media, it tends to get there's a polishing compound built into the corn cob. If you get the stuff from the pet store, it doesn't have the polishing compound in it. You can actually buy, I forget what it's called. It's car polish, basically. You just pour a little bit of that into your corn cob media, and it'll do a nice job of polishing up your brass, too.
Yeah, it's just basically like So we poured a little bit on it, and it's amazing how long that stuff will last, too, as well.
Oh, shoot, yeah, a long time.
The more you use it, the better it actually is. So, anyways, what about you? What do you use, Mike?
I use the corn cob. I'm pretty sure.
In a tumbler.
Yeah, in a tumbler. Okay. I just wash all my brass out with water first, like in the dish sink, just to get all the dirt. Because I've lots of places I shoot are really sandy, so I find that you get bunches of sand in there, and I just find just to clean all that stuff out, so I'm not putting that stuff into my tumbler as well.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Do you use ball bearings at all in there?
No, I just use pretty much what the package came with. I think it's the corn cob media, and I think there's like a polishing thing in there too that you're supposed to add a teaspoon or a tablespoon every time you run it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Kevin uses the ball bearings in the corn cob media.
Yep.
What size are they? Like, are they really small ball bearings or are they big ones?
No, they're small. They're like pellet gun size. So.
Oh, okay, that's a good idea. I never thought of that.
Yeah, just makes things move a little bit more and that as well. So,
does he trim his pistol brass?
Kevin?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know. I don't know if he does actually or not, because he does his reloading at home, not here. So, we just do the polishing and all that here. Yeah. So, yeah, and that. So I don't know. Anyways, so, all right. So what's the difference between small versus large Bristol primers, you guys?
Well, one has a bigger bang than the other one. I think the big thing you see nowadays is that a lot of the manufacturers are making a non-tox version of their rounds. And that round that is traditionally a large pistol primer, they're putting a small pistol primer into the non-tox loads for some reason. The Federal has a non-tox. It's got a small pistol primer pocket. And Winchester non-tox, it also has a small pistol primer pocket. So, you know, if you're picking up your brass and you're looking at the head stamp to see, you know, what make it is, then you have to go through it all again, because you might have a non-tox versus a regular shell. And the difference is between, say, a small pistol and a large pistol. I was reloading 45s with my small pistol from my revolver. And then when I switched to large pistol, of course, my groups went up a couple of inches. Because when you're using large pistol, you've got a bigger ignition, you've got higher pressure, and you get a little bit higher velocity out of the round with the large pistol. So you just got to be careful what brass you pick up, because, you know, you may not want a small pistol primer in a large caliber. You may want the ignition.
So why isn't all pistol rounds using a large pistol primer if it's so much better?
I don't know, because like a 9mm are all small pistol, but I'm not sure about 40, but 45s, anybody that makes a no-tox, they put a small pistol primer in it. I don't know whether it's to reduce the level of mercury in the primer, because I think because some primers use mercury, some are mercury-free. So I guess they're by putting the small pistol, they're putting less toxins in the atmosphere. I don't know. But they all make them.
Okay.
I just found that my point of impact actually changed versus, like, the same load, same powder, same projectile, but with the small primers versus the large primers, I'm actually getting a more cleaner, harder ignition with a large pistol, and my shots are going up a little bit higher.
Okay. And so go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask Thomas, do you suede your primer pockets?
No.
No,
I don't. I don't pick up any of the military brass. If I have to do any work to it, it gets recycled.
Okay.
Okay, so if you have problems getting your primer out, you just chuck them. You don't bother trying to swage them and use them again.
If it says IVI and it's a military brass, I don't use it. It's just not worth the hassles. It's range brass. It's free brass anyway, so why put myself through the extra work? Like, I'm sure if I had 1,000 rounds given to me, it might be worth it to do it, but...
Okay. But would swaging a primer pocket go with the whole theory of if everything's the exact same, then your accuracy will increase? Well, wouldn't swaging every primer pocket make it more consistent? That's the word I was looking for.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it would. Because one thing I did notice, and I was going through all my brass the other night, is that some of my Federal large pistol primer pockets, I've reshot those cases probably 15, 20 times. And I really noticed an enlargement in the flash hole. Where the cases that I had the small pistol primer pockets in, I noticed that I wasn't getting a large flash hole. The large pistol tends to burn out the flash hole over the life of the case. So I'm sure swaging it would give you more uniform primer pocket hole. But through the life of the case, that hole is going to get bigger anyway, because it's just going to get eaten out from the constant flames.
Okay.
But I did notice that the hole's like, wow, that's a huge hole. Then I look at the other case and I realize that one case I probably reloaded 20 times, and this case probably 2 or 3 times. So I think that's the advantage of using a small pistol primer, is that your primer pocket case will probably last longer because it's not getting the same pressure and burn that a large pistol will put through it.
Mm. Okay. How do you know when your flash hole, I guess, has gotten too big? Is it when your primer just falls right through, or at what point in time do you throw that out?
You know, it's funny. I've never actually had the hole itself get too big for the primer, but the actual flash hole inside the case, when that gets too large, if I notice that the flash hole is really, really big, then I'll chuck it. I've never actually had a primer fall out of a case yet. I've seen people reload cases until you can't even read the head stamp on the case anymore.
Really?
Yeah, that's how. And I've got 9mm like that, where I've reloaded them so many times that the writing's just about worn off. But usually the case will fail before that. You're gonna get, if it starts, as soon as it starts, the more you use it, the more brittle it gets over time, and eventually the case will crack.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some signs that that like a case is about to go? Just say it's not cracked yet, but a good sign to stop reloading that piece of brass.
You'll usually notice something at the case mouth first. You might see a little wear, a little teeny, teeny crack before the whole case ruptures, especially when you're crimping it. That's when you're going to see it. Mm-mm. You'll see a little hairline crack, and then the next time, either when you fire or the next time you go to seat a bullet, the whole thing will crack wide open.
Mm-hmm. Or you might see it when you're actually tumbling and all that as well, if there's any... Do you know what I mean?
Once you get it nice and clean, you may notice hairline cracks.
That's
another good important thing about doing a really good cleaning, because then you could see any imperfections or any stress on the metal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there different brands that are better, or?
I'd say better or strongly, maybe stronger. The Starline brass tends to be really, really good. I find that the Winchester 9mm cases, they don't tend to last very long. They tend to crack faster than any other brass. It depends. A lot of the action pistol shooters use top and line brass. I know Pat uses Starline, and I think Trevor uses Starline, because it's really good quality stuff. And once you find a brass that gives you good performance, people tend to stick with it.
Mm-hmm. Starline, who can you get that from?
Double Tap Sports Carry It.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Just one of our sponsors.
And I think, I'm not sure if SFRC, but it's one of the most popular brass for action shooting pistols. Mm-hmm. It's the Starline, because it's really good quality. There's brass that I won't pick up or I won't use, like the Seller and Bellet. I find it doesn't matter what case it is, their cases don't have a very long life to them.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the Starline brass so much better? Like, is it like a thicker wall? Is it just better metals that are used?
I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the metal metallurgy is better. It's more consistent. The lengths are more consistent. It's got I think they're a little bit thicker. It's just the quality control in the case is just, it's so much nicer. Like, you never mm-hmm. seen Starline brass on the range. Anybody shoots mm-hmm. Starline brass, they're picking it up.
Okay.
I've actually been picking up brass and I go, oh, this isn't mine. And somebody, that's mine. Boom, grab it right out of my hand. So.
Okay.
But usually the cheaper, you know, the less expensive ammunition is not going to have really top quality brass.
Okay.
And then even we'll go one step further. You're seeing nowadays you're getting cases made of aluminum, cases versus steel versus brass.
Mm-hmm.
One guy was asking me, you know, can you reload aluminum brass? I said, well, yeah, but don't. It can be done, but
why?
It doesn't have the same textile strength and elasticity that brass has. It's only made to be fired the one time. It's only designed for that, and it's so cheap. Why would you risk a catastrophic failure at reloading something cheap? You know, I wouldn't suggest it. Steel, sure, you can reload steel. It'll probably wear out your dies really, really fast. Because again, steel cases aren't meant to be reloaded. But some people are thrifty. They will reload aluminum and they will reload steel. I would suggest against it. I really would. Stick with the brass. It's going to have less wear and tear in your equipment, less wear and tear in your gun. You know, I think people buy the military stuff, the steel stuff, because it's dirt cheap using your rifle. But I'm sure if you're running steel cases all the time, you're going to... Aluminum's softer, so you're not going to have the same amount of damage. But if you're running steel, especially if there's imperfections in the steel, or grooves or something on the outside of the steel, I'm sure after prolonged usage, it could probably do some damage to your steel chamber. So that's just my opinion, but I would stick to brass if you're going to reload.
Okay. So where are we off? Where do we leave off here, Michael?
Do you clean your primer pockets?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Okay. Care to elaborate?
If you're doing, if I'm doing pinpoint precision shooting, like bullseye, or when I was shooting PPC, then yes, I clean my primer pockets. Because you want the best repeatable consistency in your loads. When I'm just shooting, you know, the shooting I do nowadays, I can't be bothered. I don't do it.
No.
Okay.
Now, if I had where Kevin does, where I've got the ultrasonic cleaner and I've got something that would clean it automatically instead of me having to sit there and mechanically clean each individual pocket, sure, I would deprime it, shove it all in there, get them clean anyway. But to have to, it's such a pain because you have to deprime all your cases, and I actually had my primer pocket thing on a drill, not by hand, and you have to sit there, and I knew I had a match coming out, I had to sit there with my little drill, clean out each little primer pocket. It's just, it didn't make a big difference. And I was speaking to Jameson Ross, who's one of the top IPSC shooters in the country, and I said, Jameson, do you clean your primer pockets? He goes, oh, no, never. I've never cleaned a primer pocket. I figured, okay, well, if Jameson doesn't clean his, I'm not cleaning mine. So, no, I don't clean them.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so there's no risk of burnt powder or burnt primer build up in the flash hole or anything like that then?
Well, when you decap it, you're cleaning out the hole anyway.
Okay.
Because you're putting a rod through the flash hole anyway and popping it out. So you shouldn't have to worry about the hole being plugged. But then, as I said, if you've got the tools to clean it, such as Kevin has with the ultrasonic cleaner, then why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. Just deprime it and throw it anyway, then it's clean all the time.
Yeah.
Now, rifle shooting is a different matter entirely. You're talking a lot higher pressures. You know, your primer has to be seated correctly. There's so many variables in shooting a high-pressure rifle cartridge. I'm sure that you'd want to clean the primer pocket and have the same consistency for each round, especially if you're doing long-range competition.
Mm-hmm. And, especially if you're doing long-range or precision rifle.
Yeah.
You want, so...
You want everything to be perfect.
Right, and you want everything perfect, and that's why he does it that way, too. Anyways. So you talked a little bit about IVI military brass, about people buying it because it's cheap. You say you don't pick it up and reload it, though, right?
No, I don't. Thomas? Mike does.
Yeah.
Well, I pick it up. I haven't reloaded it yet. I have, I don't know, about 3,000-4,000 rounds of regular brass that I'd rather use up first before I have to go to my IVI brass stash. And that's pretty much just because it's they crimp the primer pockets on them.
Yeah, they do.
So it makes it a bit more of a pain in the butt to deprime them. Mm-hmm. And that piece of the brass, they need to be swaged. You won't be able to fit a new primer into it. If mm-hmm. you try, you will probably, I've done it, you'll crush a primer. It will lose in the battle.
Have you ever detonated a primer yet?
Nope.
I did last year for the first time. I was, I forgotten I'd taken a few cartridges.
Oh, you told us about this.
Yeah. I forgot I'd taken a couple of cases apart, and a couple of live primers got mixed in with my cases when I was reloading. And you know, if I'm gonna, it's not a good idea to deprime a live thing anyway. But if you do, you have to do it really, really slow and wear safety glasses. I just put it in, bang! Good thing I had safety glasses on.
Okay, yeah. can we talk about this a little bit? I know it's funny to talk. It's funny. Your story is funny, but it's not really funny, is it?
No, it's sheer stupidity on my part getting a lot mixed in there.
But it just stresses the fact that, you know what, we really do need, if you're going to be reloading anything, you really should be wearing safety equipment, right?
You do. I wasn't like expecting having to wear hearing protection, but the safety glasses was a good thing.
Yes. Yep. Thomas, you're special.
I know.
Yeah.
Not a good kind of special either. Another thing is proper lighting too.
Mm-hmm.
What I've done is I actually have a little spotlight right over my press. So the way I'm set up, I can actually see if there's a charge in the case. Now, I'm not sure if you can do that, say, with Mike's press or with Dylan. I know he's upset because the cat decided to share his blanket with him.
Oh,
he's
okay.
Not happy. But I'm not sure if you can actually see that. Can you, when you have all your cases going around in your progressive press, can you actually see that case that's been charged, Mike?
Yeah. The way where my press is set up is actually across my, where I have a light right above it. So there's kind of a big light right behind me shining down.
Yeah, so it's important that you can actually see that there is a charge in the case, at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and I bought a powder cop this year just because of that problem and that concern. I wanted to be sure that every round was getting roughly the right amount of powder.
The only other thing I'd want to stress is read your manual. Yes, Kelly, read your manual, especially if you're using the Lee Progressive Press. There's all kinds of warnings on that manual saying do not use Lee primers because it's such a soft primer. There's been many noted cases of mass detonation in the primer shell. And they even sell a explosion, like a clear plastic blast shield to put over you. So in case somebody is silly enough to use Lee primers, and you go on to Canadian Gun Nets, and I bet you're going to find five or six people that decided to use Lee primers. I think it specifies to only use CCI, which is a very hard primer. Mm. That's usually a problem that's only common with the Lee, because the way the design is, they're like in a dish and they're feeding through it. It's totally different than, say, a Dillon system.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're using a Lee Progressive Press, read your manual and abide by it.
Okay.
Sorry, what primers were those that you're not supposed to use?
Lee primers?
Sorry,
federal primers in the Lee press.
Yeah, that's what I thought you meant.
I've had three coffees. I'm just flying.
All right. So, that being said, how many times do you think you can really safely reload a piece of brass? What do you think?
Well, what about rifle, Mike? How many times can you reload rifle?
I don't know. I haven't reloaded enough to get to the end yet.
Everything
I've had has either been stepped on, probably by me, before I got back to the press.
I'm guessing not more than 4 or 5 rounds out of a 223 before you actually, because you stretch the case neck every time you fire it, then you have to trim it, then you stretch it again. So I guess, you know, trimming alone, you're gonna run out of material before the case run wears out. Pistol, there's rounds downstairs. I've loaded those cases 30, 40 times.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you keep track of how many times you've reloaded a particular piece of brass?
I used to. I've given up on it now. I lost count.
That's one of the things I was going to ask. Do you mark it? Like, do you mark them in specifically, like, this lot, just in case there's issues with it or anything like that?
I do mark them, but only so I can find my brass.
Okay.
Because when we go to a match, we all mark our cases in a different color. So, say for the Orsa that I shoot at my club, when you have your run through, everybody comes out and picks up your brass and hands it to you. And you're looking at your brass, and you've got ones with two or three different colors in the back. You go, oh, that's Jim's. You give Jim back his brass. But it's more just to track your own brass. For a while there, I was reloaded 5 or 6 times. I was keeping track of it. Then I just started doing so much shooting and cleaning so much brass, I lost track.
Okay. What about you, Mike? Now you're doing IDPA and you're doing a whole bunch of other things. Do you mark yours at all?
No, I don't. When I'm reloading, if I change a recipe, a powder, anything, if I change anything on my press, what I do is I will box whatever I have, and I have tons of different boxes from different brands, like when I used to buy ammunition right from the store. So I will actually organize, I guess you could almost call it by the lot, based on what brand of box I put it in.
Okay.
I almost how like I organize it.
I do
almost
do that.
Like a recipe on top?
I do
like
that.
Like you label it?
I label each box that I make what it is, the date I reloaded it, the powder charge, and the overall length and everything. I do mark each box.
Okay. Yeah, especially so you can repeat it if you actually like the load and everything, right?
Or if you have a load that you don't like and that's too hot, so you go, no, we don't want to use this one.
Yeah, but I don't mark my actual brass. In IDPA, you don't pick up your brass till after the match is over, and it's pretty much just anyone who wants to pick up brass on the range, just go up and it's just a free for all.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So, what do you guys have for tools for picking up brass that's faster, or even without having to bend over? What do you got?
I got this thing from Amazon that I had seen online somewhere, and it's kind of like a metal rod with a, how do I describe this? It looks like it's a round basket kind of looking thing with metal wires going across it. So what it does is you can push down on it as you're going across it. I'm sure it would work 1,000 times better on concrete than it does on the dirt range. But what happens is the little metal wires will actually bend a little bit and let the brass come through.
Oh, I know which one you're
talking
about. And
snap in behind it. Yeah.
Yep.
So I find you can pick up 20 to 50 pieces of brass before you kind of have to empty it, before you start losing just as many pieces of brass as you're picking up.
You know what that is? Do you know what that is, actually?
What is it?
That's for picking up walnuts.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they use it to go underneath the trees and pick up nuts that have fallen off the trees. And it's gone over to shooting sports. We have a couple at my range. So when we're finished shooting, that's what we do. We rake the grass with this thing, and it picks up all the brass that you can't see in the grass. But it's designed for picking up nuts.
Okay.
Yeah, I picked up that after having to pick up brass one too many times, bending over.
Bending over?
Yeah.
So when we went down to Michigan, there was it's almost like a frame, and it had a larger mesh on it, and we scooped everything up and threw it on the frame and then just sifted it. Does anybody have any of those?
I've seen them. I've never actually used one.
Yeah, they worked pretty well. We were using it when it with snow, but it worked really well with that. I know that we've built something using PVC pipe with, the end for the eaves trough where it connects from the eaves trough down to the downspout. It's almost like a scoop, and you scoop up the dirt, sand, gravel, whatever it is, and we put wire mesh at the bottom of it and just sift it through. That works pretty well as well.
So it's like an archaeological dig, picking up your brass?
Yeah, it is. It's funny because Kevin will pick up brass at the range while I shoot, or I'll go and pick up brass while he shoots. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. Oh, Thomas, what do you use? Anything? Because you're old, right?
Yes,
you
I
don't
am.
Don't bending over. Sorry.
It's getting harder each year. No, I don't use anything. I just get on my hands and knees. If I can, if I don't see it all, I'm on my hands. I was on my hands and knees today because I was stupid. It's probably that 45. It kicks them right underneath the table. So you're putting your brass back in your box, and you're still short 3. You know they're around there, so you're spending 20 minutes on your hands and knees pulling up boxes or whatever. But we have that the nut collector thing that Mike was talking about at my club. And it works good for 40 or 45s. Nines are just a little kind of small. As you spin it, they tend to shoot out sometimes, too.
They drop.
Yep.
Okay. So anything else you guys want to talk about brass, picking up brass on the range, stuff you need to actually do to process the brass, or anything else that you want to talk about? Or is that...
No, just as you say, if you're picking up 40s, look for the case bulge if it's been shot in a Glock, because there's a weak spot already. Unless you have the proper die to resize that, it's not always good to reuse it in a regular press or a regular die, because you've got a weak case.
Uh-huh. With rifle reloading, you always have to trim your brass. Do you trim your pistol brass?
I did try it at one point. And I was up to talking to Stu up at Williams Arms. He just looked at me and said, why? Because unlike a rifle, it's not chambered off the case mouth like a rifle cartridge is. It's a straight wall cartridge, so there's no real need. And it doesn't get the same stretching and pressure that a rifle cartridge will get, a pistol round. It's straight wall. It doesn't get stretched and trimmed back all the time. So mm-hmm. there's no real need to do it. The only one I think chambers on the case mouth is 9mm. Some of them do.
Uh-huh. Okay. Can your brass get too long, or is it generally by the time it gets to that point, that piece of brass is gone?
The metal will probably usually crack by then.
Yeah, okay.
Because I found with, especially with the Winchester brass, when I wasn't using the four die set that we're using now, when I was just using the three die set that was putting a roll crimp on it, I found the roll crimp was the first part of the case to fail. Because you're constantly expanding and rolling that outer edge, and they would really start to crack after that. Once I switched to the four die set, I find my 9mm brass lasts a lot longer because I don't have that constant expanding and contracting of the case mouth, and I don't get the cracks now. Hmm. Or not as frequent, at least.
Okay. So, any final words of wisdom in regards to brass? Buy some shiny ones first.
Pick up your brass. If you're shooting, whatever it is, pick it up. Even if it's your 22s, pick it up. Throw it in the garbage if you're not going to reload it. If you buy a box of 9s or 40 or 45, pick up your brass, keep it, put it away. Don't throw it out. You may want to start reloading one time, or I'm sure that there's going to be a shooter who will take your brass. But just don't throw it in the garbage. It's, you know, it's something that really should be recycled and reused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We went to the Eastern Ontario District, the Granville Club, sorry. And this is just a squirrel moment, sorry. And the people that we were shooting with on the range, on the pistol range, they had this really cool contraption that they built. It was PVC pipes that they put together, and it had a screen on it. And they collected their brass, and at the end of it, they were throwing the brass out. And we said, hey, can we have that? And they said, absolutely. But, anybody at the Granville Range, there's usually drums full of brass just sitting there. People don't want the brass. So, anyways, just saying.
Well, it's probably just the casual shooter that goes out and only shoots a few times a year, just buys a couple of boxes.
No, these people were, anyways. Okay.
I used to love those people. I remember going to the range, and Sarah and I would be sitting there shooting, and then someone would come in. You'd see them get out their, you know, their Glock, whatever. They'd shoot, like, their 100 rounds, pack up their gun and leave, and just leave all the brass in one nice, neat little pile right there for me to pick up.
Yeah.
Well, you did that at my club, you'd get in trouble. You can't leave a mess.
Yeah. Well, they weren't leaving a mess. Mike picked it up.
Yeah, I picked it up. This was my old club, and at my old club, you didn't have to pick up your brass.
Yeah.
Any brass?
No. Nothing.
People will come along and pick it up.
Yeah. All right. Well, at least all the good stuff would get picked up eventually.
Now, is this an outdoor range or an indoor range?
It was outdoor.
Okay.
Yeah.
You go into, like, I was shooting today, I walked into the range, it was spotless, and when I left, it was spotless. There wasn't one piece of brass on the floor, and when I left, there wasn't one piece of brass on the floor. Want to hear a funny brass story?
Sure.
I was shooting up at, actually, Northumberland. Nobody picks up the brass, and it's in gravel. So I'm shooting there all day, and I had to actually fly into Florida the next day because my grandfather passed away and my grandmother was dying. And I'm going through customs, and they make you take off your shoes when you go through customs.
I had
a 22 casing wedged in the trash of my running shoes. And
how
of course,
long ago was this?
Then they, oh, this was 5 years ago? Yeah, 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
And so then they, after 9/11.
And then they test your shoes for explosives and stuff. Well, I set off every alarm in the place. And I said, honestly, I said, I'm a shooter. I was at the range today. I said, I gave them my firearms license, and I said, I was shooting before I came. I didn't even think about it. And they said, yeah, okay. And they took my firearms license, and well, okay, you got a valid excuse, and they let me go.
Okay.
But I got pulled over to secondary for a few minutes.
Yeah. Strip searched.
You got to take your shoes off and everything now. Yeah, I wasn't crazy about the anal probe.
Gosh.
All right, on that note, let's get into the events. So, the first event we're going to talk about is the 6th annual Podcasters Charity Shoot that's being held on Saturday, June 25th at the Brockville District Fish and Game Club. The event is open to everyone and costs only $35, which includes the chance to win the USCON 41 shotgun as the door prize. If you're traveling from outside of Ontario, make sure you sign up as soon as possible because you have to ensure that you actually have time to apply for your ATT. And that's if you're planning on bringing restricted firearms. So make sure you do that. On Friday, don't forget about RJ Woods. He is from Fire Art Solutions. Yeah, Fire Art Solutions Training. And he's going to be doing the handguns fundamental course. And it's $50 to do that. There's only 2 spots left, so sign up to do that as well. RJ is going to be donating 100% of the proceeds from the Tango Yankee Project chips that he is going to be selling at the charity event. Or charity shoot, he's going to be donating 100% of the proceeds to the Sojourn fund as well. So, and what else do we have to tell them about that there, Thomas? Do you know?
Well, you've missed your sign up for the free t-shirt that ended May 1st, so you're no longer getting a free t-shirt, but there will be shirts for sale available at the event. So to sign up for the charity shoot or the hangover course, visit New Shirt Canada's website. What else? Or you can shoot us an email. We also, the Quality Inn, the hotel, we have a block of seats set aside. So far...
Rooms, not seats. Well, everybody has to sit. No, was, just kidding.
So yes, far as I know, only Sharp 97, George, and myself have reserved rooms. So they do have a block of rooms put aside for us. So if you're going to sign up. They're holding them to mid-May. And if that, after that, then...
Yep, they'll release them so that they can have other people.
We specifically choose that hotel because it's within walking distance to Kelly. So if there's any going over to Kelly's.
No, it's not. It's in Brockville.
We're all going to party over at Kelly's afterwards.
It'll be a long walk. Anyways, it's close to the range. That's why we chose that one.
Okay.
All right. You know, it's open. You can actually go visit the Facebook page to ask to be added there, and we'll add you to it. And you can, at the top of the Facebook page, and also the website. Our website is the registration form, so go there. Or you can always shoot us off an email at newshootercanada@gmail.com, and we'll set you up with that as well. All right. And...
Event number 2?
Event number 2, why don't you take that, Thomas?
We have the CSSA Stick to Your Guns dinner, and I booked the day off, so I'm planning on going. So come up, meet Bob Zimmerman and TV star Faith Goldie, Saturday, May 14th, 2016, at the Quality Hotel and Conference Center, 1011 Bloor Street East, Oshawa. Cost is $69.95, cocktails at 6, and dinners at 7. For more information, please visit the CSSA website. And event 3 is the AR classification petition. It's closed April 29th.
So it is?
That's what it
no,
says
it actually is closing May the 7th. So
oh, is it 7? Because it says April 29th here.
Oh, I don't know where that came from. Yeah, so anyways. Mike, do you want to tell us about the AR-15 reclassification petition, please?
It's set.
It's
thanks, Thomas.
It's all erased now. Oh well.
Yep. The petition is put forward. It's to reclassify the AR-15 to make it the same as pretty much any other non-restricted hunting firearm. So if it had a barrel length of 18 and a half inches or longer, it's non-restricted. So that means that you'd be able to shoot at on your own property or take it hunting, mm-hmm. anything like that. And it would also change all the variants back. So things like the AR-10 that shoots a 308, or I don't know all the variants. I just know that there's some out there. But yeah, so the petition is to revert the AR-15 back to non-restricted, and hurry up and sign it because it's going to close on May the 7th. And as of right now, it has 24,167,000 signatures on it.
Yep.
And you know, us old people used to be able to hunt with their AR-15s.
Okay. On that note, do you have any information about the Grand Prix, Thomas, at all?
No, I haven't seen it. There was a two-day, it's the Air Rifle Grand Prix. It was shot at the Pan Am Center this weekend. Okay. I was going to get Mary to message me, but I haven't been online yet to see how the shooters does. Well, they're using, they used to do it at a big hotel in Toronto, but now we have the Pan Am Shooting Center. So a lot of the different shooting competitions done this weekend. So we'll get the results next weekend. It finished tonight, so I'm not 100% sure who did what, but we'll bring you the results next week.
Yeah, we'll put those in, bring me in Guns in the News. All right. So we have a couple of emails that came in. The first one comes in from Paul. It says, "Hi, guys. I was the one that emailed you with the plastic anchors for snap caps. I use them for the 22 caliber Pardini. I'd like to sign up for the charity shoot. I wouldn't be able to attend this, but I would like a t-shirt. Can I send the $35 by PayPal? And here's my shipping address so Thomas can send me the cards to me." Hey, Thomas.
Oh, so that's who that was. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, yeah. I do have your cards, anyways. Paul. They're sitting on my desk.
Yep. Like to say thank you guys for doing the podcast. I listen to them at work and makes my day more enjoyable, Paul. Oh, so I actually replied to Paul and told him that he could actually we do know he's down in the States. So he sent us the $35 by PayPal, and we are going to be sending him out a t-shirt. And yeah, we have the address, so Thomas is going to be sending him out his cards to him. And you're welcome. We enjoy doing the podcast for you. So, yeah.
Oh, so we have to think, what do we do if an American wins the USCON that doesn't come?
Well, we figure that out.
Okay. I'm sure we have an American friend that can take it back with them.
Okay.
I never said that.
Thomas?
Yes?
Did you put this in from Gord?
I did. I got an email from Gord today.
Okay, do you want to read it?
Yeah, he says, "In case you're wondering, I ended up going with the 535. I figured the 3.5-inch would work if needed. I picked it up last Saturday, took it to trap this week. Needless to say, I shot 2 rounds and maybe got 5 out of 50.
Okay.
However, I did do a very good job of ejecting shells into the recycle container next to each station. the podcast has talked me into going with the 22 instead of the 9 for my very first handgun. Ammo was far cheaper." Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
"And I figured get all the other parts of shooting down first." Yeah, I agree. I ended up ordering a GSG 1911. Good review from what I found online. Now I just have to wait until the store gets it in. Unfortunately, the one they had was sold. I need to order another one. Then I have to do my handgun certification. I'm still trying to work out the charity shoot. I see the college research has rooms far cheaper than the Comfort Inn. I didn't know that. Any benefit to staying at the Comfort Inn? So as Kelly just said, it's closer to the range. But if you're driving,
and Thomas and George are going to be there, so maybe.
And anyways, also, if I did come, all I have is my shotgun, hopefully my GSG. What should I bring, if any, guns or ammo-wise to shoot the guns provided? Thanks again, Thomas, for your recommendation, Gord. If you don't have a gun, there's going to be lots there.
Yeah, there are.
If you don't have your GSG, you're welcome to use one of my gun Gords. It's not a problem. Most of the people that are going to be shooting the 50 yards will be using probably 10-22s. I'm sure we can find a 10-22 for you. Shooters tend to be very, very generous, lending equipment to new people. As far as your GSG, nice little gun. A couple suggestions on the GSG. First of all, do not put it in a Kydex holster. Those things have a zinc alloy frame. It's a very soft frame. The Kydex will wear the holster, will wear the finish off that gun really, really fast. So if you're going to get a holster for it, get something that attaches to the trigger guard. Second thing on the GSG is that when you get it, it comes with an optional mag disconnect, because I helped when JT got his, we did a little work on that. First thing to do with the mag disconnect, take it in your hand really tight, throw as hard as you bloody well can away. Just chuck it. Mag disconnects are made for lawyers, not shooters. You don't need a mag disconnect in a gun.
Okay.
But it's optional, which is funny. It's not actually in the gun. They say, well, it's here. If you want to put it in, put it in. So put it right in the garbage and throw it away. But you'll like the GSG. It's a nice little gun. The only other thing I would suggest is don't even bother using the safety. They're plastic. They don't take a lot of wear and tear very well. But they're an accurate little gun, and I think you'll like it.
Okay. I'd recommend using safeties if they're there.
No.
Just saying.
Well, if he's going to be holstering it.
Yeah, if you're holstering it, you have to use the safety. If you can, put an aftermarket steel safety in it. The nice thing about
That's a great option.
The nice thing about a GSG is that it's more or less on the outside. It's a 1911 clone. So if you can put any type of grips on it you want. You can change the sights on it. As I said, it's a softer metal, so you may not be wanting to start drifting out your sights yourself. But the rear sight's not adjustable, but the front sight comes with three different sight heights. So find an ammo that shoots to the point of impact that you want with the sights you're going to install. But it's nice that you can change the grips and you can adjust it and stuff. The only thing I don't like is the plastic safety. I know most people I know that have them have broken them off. So.
Okay. Well, it's a great starter gun for him.
Well, it's a nice little gun. Being a 1911, it's got a nice grip angle. The trigger's
and
decent.
Thomas likes 1911s. So.
I do.
Anyways.
So does Kelly Gord, too.
Well, you know what? Yeah, they're okay. Anyways. Gord, when you come to the charity shoot, you can use... both Thomas and I and other people will be bringing their guns, so you can use those. So, bring some 9mm or,
Yeah, bring some factory 9mm. Don't bring any of the reloaded stuff. Or it's a great deal getting the stuff from Firearms Outlet and the other stuff that's, remanufactured ammunition, but most people won't let you shoot remanufactured stuff. If you're going to bring ammo, bring brand new factory to put through people's guns. And bring a bucket. You won't need a lot of 22s. We said, 40 rounds? Bring a couple of boxes of the Aguila High Speed's nice. That'll give you good accuracy.
Yep. Okay. So iTunes. We don't have any iTunes this week. So if you want to, drop on by to iTunes and give us a review. Give us some stars, because you know what? We'd like to hear from you.
Do we actually look at the iTunes?
I did.
Did you? Okay.
Yep. Canada, US, Belgium, Turkey. We'd like to hear from Turkey.
We got a Facebook, we got a like from Iraq this week.
We did. Yeah, we did. All right. Speaking of Facebook, we have, as of tonight, we had 797 Facebook likes. So we're almost at 800. So let's see if we can get to that. So.
Yeah,
sharing.
I kind of thought we'd break 800 this weekend. I guess we didn't.
No, we didn't. But you know what? That's cool. 800. I think almost in a year this time last year, we were just over 100.
Yep.
So congratulations. That's a big jump. So, give us an iTunes, give us a review, send us an email. Emails work too. So emails at host@newshootercanada.ca, or you can even use our newshootercanada@gmail.com as well.
Yeah, or if you're
we'll take it from there.
Or if you're friends with us on Facebook, just send us a Facebook message too. We'll answer those.
Yep.
Yeah, because Gord actually answered. He actually sent me an email from my email address, so that's fine too. If you want to contact us personally, that's fine too.
Yep. So yeah. Okay. Closing comments. Thomas, you put something in here about the Olympic Committee. Do you want to talk about that a little?
There was a post on Facebook, and I actually put it on our page. The Olympic Committee is thinking about removing prone shooting from the Olympics. So right now there is currently a petition going on to not, I think they need another 400 signatures. So if you go to our Facebook page, you'll see the link for the petition there. Please go on and sign it. You know, removing shooting sports from the Olympics is a bad thing to start, because once they start removing one sport, then they're removing other shooting sports. I know at one point they wanted to get rid of pistol shooting from the Olympics, and it's, shooting sports is one of the oldest Olympic games there is. So it's, I think it's important that we preserve what we have in our Olympic representation to the world. So please go on the Facebook page, find the link, and sign the petition to not remove prone shooting from the Olympics.
Okay. Shout out. Sounds like a good plan. Yeah. I just wanted to say, okay, thank you, Mr. Host.
No. I'm pulling a Kelly.
Before we get to shoutouts, I just wanted to say, make sure you actually go to one of our advocacy groups and join it, whether it's the CCFR or it might be the CSSA or CFI or A or any of them. But go on out and join them, just so that you know, they have our support, because they actually are supporting us, right? Yep. Right, guys?
It's important.
Yep. Yep. And do you guys want to make a shout out before we get to shout outs? But do you guys want to make a shout out to any of the other podcasts that we enjoy and like and think people should actually give a listen to?
Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns.
Yeah, they're hilarious.
Yeah, learn how not to reload and blow up your Savage Access.
Yes.
And actually, I think they had okay. Mostly Reloaded podcasts on the show after that happened. That was a good episode.
They did. Yes, they did.
Except for the music, they played too much Rush.
Okay, you know what? You need to stop. And I did hear you actually poo-poo on Rush on our show.
Oh, they didn't read the whole letter. They paraphrased it.
Anyways, how can you be Canadian and not like Rush? Seriously. Okay.
They used to play in our high school dances. That's how old I am. Max Webster Rush played our high school dances.
Oh, you're breaking up, Thomas. We have to move on to Michael.
Well, I'd say for anyone who has any interest in reloading, whether you do it now or you just think you might want to get into it eventually, would be the Reloading Podcast. It's a good group of guys there who have a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, they do. So
there's a lot that can be learned from them.
Okay. Yep. And I'm starting to get into some action shooting, or wanting to get into action shooting. So check out the action shooting podcast as well.
They should call it IPSC Radio.
All right. Now, Thomas, you can do your shout out.
Do I have to now? My shout out is to, honestly, is Scott Gardner was the gentleman that shared the post with us about Mary's Athlete of the Year page. And I started thinking about it. You know, we've got hockey moms, we've got hockey dads, you know, parents that spend so much time of their money and their energy and their weekends driving their kids to all these hockey games and tournaments and everything else. And I remember my young friend Porter, I know it was costing his parents almost $15,000 a year to take this little kid to all these hockey tournaments all over the place. Well, Scott Gardner is a shooting dad, not a hockey dad. He's a shooting dad. And this is a gentleman who wasn't into shooting sports himself. His daughter got the bug just like the rest of us. She was introduced to the Army cadets. And he's got a little bit tougher because he's got the gas from Cornwall and the driving and the hotels and the accommodation and everything else. He also has to support and put up with the negative media and the negative media impression that we get from our friends and our neighbors who have this idea that shooting is bad and that putting guns into a young person's hands is bad. And he had the common sense to go, no, it's a sport. My daughter loves it and I'm going to support her. So my shout out to Scott Gardner for being an awesome shooting dad.
Okay, thanks, Thomas. What about you, Mike? Do you got any shout-outs?
Yeah, I'm just going to give a shout-out to the Eganville District Sportsman Club, the IDPA volunteers at the match this weekend. Mm-hmm. Just thanks for all the help. Thanks for running the course, and thanks for not giving me any penalties.
Sweet. Okay, Kelly, I do have a... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, Kelly, what about you?
Oh, I do have one as well. My shout is actually going out to Thomas. I just wanted to say thank you, Thomas, because of all the amazing work that you've been doing. We have a lot of sponsors for the charity shoot. You've been working really hard at it. So I just wanted to say thank you because of the fact that you deserve to have a little bit of credit. And thanks for that. Thomas? Thomas?
Yes, Kelly.
Okay.
I just said, no, thank you. It's been a labor of love, and I've been enjoying doing it. I was coughing, okay. So I muted my mic. Forgot to turn it back on.
Okay, I'm going.
Thomas. No, it's, you know, we started this early. I think I started approaching people. I think Trevor handed this to us like a month after the last charity shoot. So I started back in September getting people, and the response has been amazing. So, and Kelly's done a lot of work too. Like, she's been doing all the admin and all the registration and everything else. So it's, you know, even though you give me credit, it's really a joint effort. And Kevin's done a lot of work. And no, George has been busy working, so we've been having to you know, do stuff that he would normally have to be involved in. So it's
a group effort.
It is. We all, and Kevin has been a great help. He really has too.
And Mike and George and everybody. So it's going to be a great event. So, but I just thought I would give you props this week because of the fact that I know that you've put a lot of time and effort into getting some sponsors and that as well. And you know what? You're great at it. You're great at actually talking to people and chatting them up. So I just thought I'd say thank you.
I believe George actually called me a flirt.
Well, it's that's with the females. If you're flirting with men, okay, whatever. Okay. It's 2016. That's acceptable. All right. Okay. So, anyways, let's finish this up, shall we? Okay. All right. So, Thomas, go for it.
So keep your barrel down range. And smoking.
And keep it classy.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
All right, you guys. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening.
Good night.
Good night. Winchester attack.
I like my double barrel. Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at hosts@newshootercanada.ca. And please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day. I like guns.